ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I mentioned there just a minute ago in the opener that a team from New York University has found that negative friendships could cause premature ageing. And if a person has several frenemies, it could be comparable to the biological ageing caused by smoking. Now, I'm joined by the practical psychologist on Instagram, Alison Keating. How are you, Alison?
Hi, how are you?
You're going to give us your views on whether toxic relationships are turning us grey. So what do you make of this new research which suggests that negative friends can cause premature ageing?
I think it's very interesting. And I suppose my first thought was about the study that was done on loneliness that said when you're lonely, it's comparable to smoking 15 cigarettes a day and reduces your life expectancy by 26%. And when you look at that, it's like, well, what's going on there? It's lack of social connection, feeling isolated. And there's nothing more isolating than being in a friendship and actually feeling like they don't like you, or you're wondering what you've actually done wrong when you come away from an interaction. So I think it's an interesting comparison between the two, and something that's really worthy of our attention in terms of questioning how the kind of the health of our friendships.
I love that you've equated this to research that's already done around loneliness, and this is now looking at unhealthy, I suppose, relationships to whatever form they take. But this is specifically talking about, I suppose, toxic or frenemies, toxic friendships. So what are the red flags? How do you know if you're in a negative friendship?
Sometimes I think it can be hard to tell. And I think part of the issue is if you haven't had kind of relationships or friendships that were healthy when you were a child or an adolescent, then sometimes you might be very happy to have a friendship and not recognize that it's actually damaging you. And they might, as you say, that I hate that term frenemies, but it you think you're actually friends when actually they're not supportive to you when good things happen, or you find that they're actually cruel, but in a kind of a very nuanced way, that it's always passed off as a joke. So I think the kind of red flags are when people make comments about things like, you know, your weight or your appearance, or kind of make fun of your sexuality or your family, like really things that are going to actually hurt. I do see a difference between the genders with it sometimes as well. Say specifically with women, it can be the type of relational aggression where, like, kind of the alpha female, can everybody knows who the boss is in the group, but it's very hard to kind of stand up and call out bad behavior. You know, I was thinking about, you know, the movie Mean Girls, and it obviously struck such a chord of people.
Yeah.
But I often wonder, did mean girls turn into mean women? And I think as a society, sometimes we don't actually stand up to the person who perhaps they may be the most popular, but perhaps popular is equated to actually them being somewhat feared and people being afraid to call out when someone is being just plain mean to somebody else.
So there's two things I want to just dive into on this. One is a big red flag for me, if you've got somebody in your group that constantly ends sentences with, "I'm only messing."
Absolutely.
No, you're not only messing. Words mean things, and words matter, and words hurt. So I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is constantly saying, "Oh, that's only messing," I mean, I use that as a joke with, you know, with some people, like, "Oh, I'm only messing." If people say that, that's a red flag, I think, right? But the other thing is, as you said, the hierarchy in a group of friends can often come from school, can't it? So they can be very old hierarchies that are hard to break.
And I think also that kind of, you know, I'm going to go to men in a second, but for women, sometimes it's that kind of conditioned, like, you know, the meanness is given with a smile. So it's kind of hard to kind of be like,
milk.
Oh my God, did they just say that? So often, you know, a client says to me, like, I said, well, when someone said really something really mean to you, what did you think in your head? And they were like, well, I thought it was horrible. But we never actually say that out loud because it's that kind of conditioning. You can't even call it out. So I think it's about recognizing and saying directly, sorry, what did you mean by that? Without the smile, without the joke, because Irish people always kind of, you know, we pass it off as humor, but to actually look someone in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said there. Could you repeat it? Or you repeat back what they actually said.
I'm quite good at calling it out, I have to be honest. I don't like
it. Oh, you're brilliant.
Yeah,
that's
I'll say, what
fantastic.
Was that? But I think also it can be disguised as humor very often, right? And you don't want to. I think we all walk away from situations, go home and lie in bed that night and rehearse what we should have said. You lie there talking to yourself, and I should have said this, and then I should have said that. What's that barrier?
Okay, it's very simple. So what happens is when you're in that situation socially, we want to fit in, we want to belong, and like we're kind of hardwired to do that. So when someone actually calls us out, we feel the rejection and it stings. Like it actually shows up in your brain in the same place as a sting and a burn. I always think our language is so interesting when someone says, oh my God, burn. But that actually, that social rejection or being potentially pushed out of the friendship or group really makes you sometimes kind of freeze in that moment. So I imagine it like a little helmet, and it goes over the thinking part of your brain, which actually also has the language part.
Wow.
So then when you're lying in bed at night, you're going, why didn't I say that? That is why.
Wow. If someone says no shade, they mean shade, right?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And then, you know, in another way, like in healthy friendships, like there is also research showing that, you know, in really healthy relationships, you can like joke with each other and like, you know, kind of be playful with each other, but it's never
mean,
hurtful.
Yeah.
It's not mean, and there's a difference.
Yeah. It's funny.
It's funny. Yeah. And like there's probably truth in it as well. And like, you know, even the connection, the friendship is that it's even safe enough to say that. And I also think in healthy friendships, you can be really honest and say, actually, that wasn't okay. And then the friend will go, oh, I'm very sorry. But in an unhealthy relationship, somebody will turn it back on you and go, oh my God, you're so sensitive.
Oh, yes. Oh, sting. I said sting. Oh,
be careful there. Yeah.
So, okay. So what does it, because you know what, we could fall down a rabbit hole here, couldn't we, into what unhealthy relationships look like. I suppose what I learned growing older was what a healthy relationship looks like is the best place to start. So what, describe what you think a healthy relationship looks like. I'm writing this down, by the way.
What I think a healthy relationship is, and I won't get any points here for like people, because the research from New York was saying that people were kind of, you know, it was impacting them prematurely aging because they were in a high state of stress. I think a healthy relationship is the complete opposite of that.
Oh.
So your nervous system feels safe, feels comfortable. You have fun. You can share things with each other. You feel trust and you feel that lovely warmth of connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but you walk away energized, whereas the unhealthy relationship
drains
you. Walk away and you're like, what do they mean by that?
Life-sucking vampires is what we call them in the family.
Yes, yeah. And you're drained. You're physically drained. I actually think your energy is the best indicator of the health of your relationship.
That's amazing. That is really amazing. So, yeah, so when you leave someone's presence, check yourself and go, did that give anything to me or did that take something away from me? That's brilliant advice.
You know this phrase, radiators and drains?
Yeah, love it.
So it's that, like, are they a radiator or are they a drain?
I have another simple one, though. I think people around you need to be your cheerleader. I hate that. That's very cheesy, but they need to be happy for you.
Listen, life is hard enough. And I think it's a real sure sign of a healthy relationship that a friend is actually happy for you in the good times in your life.
Yeah.
And that also would be my biggest green flag in a relationship. And again, in a normal way, they could be like, you know, say someone got pregnant or got engaged or something big happened or got this big job, they could still say, God, I wish I had it, but I'm so happy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. You made me think of the scene where a woman gets engaged in the film and the girl's like, what's happening? Her friend is completely upset. So do you find men and women have different expectations for friendships? And I fall somewhere in the middle in this, and I can, because I have a lot of female friends, a lot of male friends. There is slightly different expectations, I feel. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. For men and women.
I think there are different expectations, but I'd love it to open up a bit more because I sometimes say I wish women would borrow some of men's excellent boundaries and direct kind of, no, I actually can't come tonight, and the person isn't crying thinking they don't like me, but they actually just have good boundaries.
True.
And I wish that men sometimes would feel more comfortable. This is a generalization, but some men I work with, they find it hard to trust or to kind of be vulnerable, and especially around mental health, to share any kind of difficulties they're having. But when they do actually share it, more times than not, the person goes, oh my God, I completely get it. And like that type of connection. So I think women and men can really learn from each other. to be like kind of direct but kind, warm and connecting, but also have boundaries.
I had a great line from a counsellor once say to me, this ex person in your life, you don't need boundaries, you need barriers.
That's
a great line, wasn't it? So men are good at saying no and saying what they feel they want, but yeah, women sort of go, oh, well, I do what they think the friend wants them to do. And there, that can cause, I suppose, yeah, unrest and difficulty. So I'm in a toxic friendship. How do I get myself out of it?
So it depends on the situation and the person. So, you know, I would much prefer to be able to say to someone like, this friendship is not working, I'm very unhappy, and give specific, you know, examples. However, if it's a really dysfunctional kind of toxic friendship, if you do that, and if you know, if I speak to this friend about this and you know before you even have the conversation that they're going to go vitriolic on you, I think you're actually allowed to go, I'm allowed to put up this kind of safe boundary and start to distance yourself back. I don't believe in ghosting. I think it's an awful thing to do to people.
Yeah.
But also people need to take some accountability for really bad behavior. So that's where the part of being upstanders for yourself within a group. And I think that's something I'd love to see kind of change that. But I understand the difficulty of doing it in the moment, but I would love to see that happen more, that people have the courage to say, will you stop picking on, you know, yeah, like, but it's something that would be great to see, yeah, improve.
You're getting lots of texts. People are really reacting to this. So a text, an anonymous text says, I've always wondered about male versus female bitchiness and gossip. I worked in a pub and saw the way men behave behind people's backs and false to their faces. I think they're insinuating that men could be quite bitchy as well. What do you say to that?
I think we're all like at a human level. It just depends on the person. And I think that's a tricky one to wonder, because you're going to be putting on a kind of a public face in the service industry. And, you know, if the person's coming up to you at the bar, maybe they're too drunk and you're like, okay, no problem. But that's a tricky one.
Yeah.
I do think that sometimes women are conditioned to kind of not actually say directly how they feel, and it is that kind of relational aggression that actually happens, where they might give out about one friend to another friend.
Yeah.
And I think that's not healthy.
But there are people in your group, I think, and you can say this safely, that sometimes there's one person you go, wow, what are they saying about me?
Totally.
They seem to be a bit too loose-lipped. You might be able to advise on this one. I'm going to not say their name, but it says, it's the passive-aggressive approach by a friend of mine that makes me want to walk away. If I say anything, it's thrown back at me for being too sensitive. How would you deal with that?
Sometimes when I hear, like, can you imagine how many times a day I hear in therapy that people have been called too sensitive? But sometimes I wonder, perhaps the person saying the thing should be more sensitive themselves in the first place. Sensitivity is something that we really need in our world. I think we should be mindful of how we speak and communicate with people, and to take action for your own behavior. I think if you're calling someone out for being too sensitive, you're immediately annihilating their experience. Mm. And there's lots of different reasons why people might be more sensitive. There could be neurodivergence. There could be, you know, past trauma. You never know what's actually going on for someone that actually could really make them more prone to feeling sensitivity in a way that actually really impacts them. So I think for the people who are calling other people too sensitive, perhaps it would be nice to try and be sensitive yourself.
Here's a kind of a concluding one. I was in a friendship for many years and only now realise how self-centred and self-serving the other was. Everything was on her terms with no regards for me. We fell out because I said, enough is enough. Now I'm annoyed at how much headspace she occupied for years. She wasn't outwardly mean, but had no regard for my feelings. I feel free of her now. What do you think of that?
I think what can happen is, people don't understand, like, in adulthood, our friendships are so important. And, you know, connection with somebody that you're choosing to be in a relationship with, there's no sense of obligation, you know, because like you'd have with family. I do think there's some degree of obligation in friendships. But if that person was occupying that much space in their head, we can just get stuck in that type of rumination.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's what the research is saying, is that, like, there was more of an increase in depression. So when we get into that kind of rumination of going through it again and again in our head, it's because it didn't end up the way we had hoped it would. Mm-hmm. And our brain kind of can't really deal with that. It's upset at how it ended.
Sometimes it's just time to move on. But one last quick question for you. Do you think it's better to keep your social circle tight with a small number of trusted pals? Professor Dunbar of Oxford University says 2 to 3 friends, he considers that a very good number.
I personally think that's a good number myself as well. However,
I think it's too
many. Depends on yourself. Like some people, you might be really extroverted and love having lots of different friends at different levels. For another person, you know, it just depends on your social preferences. But at a kind of a realistic level, I think it's hard to maintain a large amount of friendships. But I think it's just looking at yourself and going, okay, how do I spread myself out evenly here and whatever actually works for you? But I do think the smaller the number, like at the end of the day, who are you going to call when the trouble hits? They're your friends.
Listen, Alison Keating, and people can find you at the practical.psychologist on Instagram. Never a truer word, really insightful stuff. Thank you so much for taking our call. Have a great day. Let's take a quick break.
You too.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.